Hey everyone, welcome back to the Gary V Audio Experience once again. I'm Jacob from Team Gary, and to give you a little context about today's episode, Gary does an awesome fireside chat with Ryan Smith, the owner of the Utah Jazz. This was during NBA All-Star Weekend this year, which was last weekend. Gary was in Salt Lake City, Utah, attending the events, and he did a live one-on-one with Ryan Smith in front of an audience. So we really hope you enjoy this one. There's a ton of value in here. Give us your feedback. Drop your comments in the Spotify comment section down below, but also tweet Gary your feedback, what you thought about this episode, and we'll see you in the next one.
This is the Gary V Audio Experience.
You're kind of in the middle of it right now, right? We're right in the middle of this incredible weekend that I'm sure, because I know you've put a lot of thought into, you've been excited about. How are we feeling at halftime?
So first of all, like, our organization in the NBA, I'm just looking around, I see Caroline, I see Joey. Like, Joey moved here like a month ago just to sit in Grand America for like a month to make sure this was going on.
That sounds like a privilege. The Grand America's the Grand America's pretty sweet.
And then, like, we look at Caroline and everything she's doing with the Jazz, and it's just been a community effort because you very rarely get these moments that you know you're going to be talking about. Like, I was there 30 years ago. Like,
yep.
People are asking me, like, yeah, I was in the Salt Palace right here 30 years ago. And, like, we know we're coming at it again. And so I think we've all kind of taken the strategy, look, we're full send all the way up to it, full send all the way through it. We can sleep next week.
I love it.
Where we're at.
I agree. Let's talk about just the journey of getting to this point. You know, we did a podcast recently and you made a point, I am very loud for a very long time about my ambition to by the New York Jets, my great love in sports. And you talked about being able to buy the team that you loved in a world where just even getting to the place of buying a team is so ludicrous, so needle in a haystack, so one in a trillion. But to then actually get your team, it's crazy. Do you pinch yourself in moments like this?
So first of all, you're not gonna be interviewing me the whole time. So, I've got you started.
I love to talk. You can interview me the whole time. I'm ready.
Right? First of all, it's not lost on me. Like, 30 years ago, being a kid in junior jazz and, like, getting a ticket to come in here and, like, being able to be up here. But this journey is interesting because just like you with the Jets, when we had this conversation, you can name every draft pick of offensive lineman that didn't work out over the last 15 years. And quarterbacks.
There's a lot of them.
But so going through that entire journey, like, I know nobody needs to tell me what it's like to be a Jazz fan. No one needs to tell me the pain, but also the joys of what happens when we're rocking. And so, look, there's a lot that goes into that, but when Ash and I, like, made a decision that, like, hey, and this is what we want to go do, and there's so much hurt because, you know, these opportunities don't come up. And we originally had an opportunity that was extremely rare with another team. And I told the story, I was all the way down to the end. And she knew I was kind of on a solo mission here, like full guitar solo on the left side, right? And she's like, well, what about our Jazz tickets? And I was like, yeah, what about them? She's like, well, like, can we still go to the games? And I was like, well, no, it really doesn't work that way. But everything tells me that we're going to fall in love with this new team. Like, you can't describe it. You just really, it's like having a new child. You just fall in love, and you're everything there. And she's like, no, we're Jazz fans. And the next week, because we kind of had to decide in about a two-week period, the next week I knew that, like, I wasn't getting a lot of attention. And I wasn't communicating very well. And I knew she was kind of like, hey, support you, but this is not right. And so I remember calling Adam and saying, like, this might be the only time I know that we can be a part of the NBA in this way. There's only 30 teams, and they're super rare and tiny to everything. But we're just gonna have to pass. And he's like, why? And I said, honestly, because we're Jazz fans.
Wow.
And then what happened, this is after I was actually in this building, and I sat down, we're in a bin like this, Silicon Slopes, and I sat down with Gail Miller. This would be like you sitting down with...
I'm Gail right now,
yeah,
I got
yeah,
it.
No. This would be like you sitting down with the Jets ownership forever, and I said, Gail, this was in February, I said, Gail, what's going to happen with the team? And like, long term, is there ever a chance for Lewis? He's like, absolutely not. Like, we've had it in our family for 35 years, and it's not going to be anywhere else. And I said, cool, I mean, you did an incredible job, it's awesome. But I had to kind of have that conversation before I went down the other way.
Sure.
Because that was like option one, this is option 30. And we turned it down, and I went back to Gail and said, hey, we're going to be the best sponsors and supporters of the Jazz. You have anything you need from us because we're all in on the team, and Ashley was too. And then we got a call in July where it said, hey, are you still interested? And I was like, oh, you guys are thinking about carving a little bit out? And she's like, well, it was kind of like, well, they said, it's kind of like the whole thing. And I was like, you're joking. This isn't real. And then I said, yeah, we're interested in what we're going to do. That's how we're here. But the thought is like, it's just stewardship. I was with Gail this morning, and the Utah people know it's a little bit of a calling.
A little bit?
Yeah, it's like we know the responsibility of this. It's as much a community asset as anything you'll be a part of. This is not a moneymaker. This is about doing good. It's about this. It's about bringing the championship here. You will be saying the exact same thing.
And you, no. You will be saying the exact same thing. You will be saying the exact same thing. And I don't have an NFL team. I grew up cheering for the Dolphins. I'm not big on tell us your Jets.
I love it, brother. Thank you.
Okay.
Listen.
I'm just waiting.
The joy I have for you accomplishing this, and then to your point, the joy I have talking to your players currently, because I talked to some of them, it's just so fun, maybe bringing it to something that impacts a lot of us, because you're in rarefied air here. There's nothing better than being in a family of seven, in a small business of 23, in a corporation of 800, 8,000. There's just nothing better than when the top is right. Everything stems from that. And I think it just really, I'm very happy, you know, since you're in the Western Conference, I'm a Knicks fan. I have no feelings towards the Jazz that are negative, which makes this quite comfortable, right? Like the Bulls mascot came up to me, I was like trying to be, you know, courteous because there was kids around and we took a photo. But when the mascot left, I was extremely upset. I hate the Bulls. Let me get this off my chest. I'm 47 years old, I'm a Knicks fan. 47-year-old Knicks fans have to hate the Bulls. Have to. It's a rule.
There's a hey.
Yeah, fair.
If you want to know the Wi-Fi password in the arena, it's Jordan Bushoff.
Let's go.
But hey, I have to ask you a question.
Okay.
You came over to my house.
Yes.
You were there. You met my son, Jet.
Yes.
And you asked what his favorite number was.
Yes. And he said five.
He said five.
Yes.
And you told one of the most amazing stories to him. And it was one of those moments with my boy, I was like, I hope you're listening right now. Like, I hope you never forget this because it was so organic. You asked him how he spelled his name. Like, it was almost one of those moments where I was like, what's going on here? Like, tell everyone that story. Because this is why you want to do what you're doing.
Yeah, I mean, we had a great time, Ash, the kids. It was just really nice before a game, and I'm meeting the boys, and what's your name? And he says, Jet, and that really catches my attention. And I'm like, that's amazing. And then just kind of, I've met other boys named Jet through the years, but this is the first time I asked him, I said, what's your favorite number? And when he said 5, it was just like this incredible moment. I think about it a lot, it happened recently. And so for me, I was born in the Soviet Union and came to this country when I was 3. And the first couple of years were extremely rough. We were extremely poor. And when we moved in 1982, when I was 7, to Edison, New Jersey, that's kind of when our American dream started. That's when we were out of like the gutter and we're, like it started happening. And that's when I started really, to be frank, learning more English and becoming Americanized. And you know, for the, raise your hands if you're under 35. Just raise your hands. So for you youngsters, first of all, that's epic. Second of all, something crazy happened back in the day. Kids went outside. And so I went outside and some kids were throwing a Nerf football and I came over and they're like, you know, my friend Eric Godfrey says to me, what team do you like? And I'm like, I have no idea. And he's like, you're a Jets fan. And I'm like, all right, we're Jets fans, you're a Jets fan. It's true that sometimes I wish they were Giant fans and said I was a Giant fan because 4 Super Bowl rings would feel very nice. But I love the journey we're on. I love the climb. 100%.
That's when you became a Jets fan. That is told by the neighbor kid, I'm a Jets fan.
That is exactly how I became a Jets fan. That was the 1982 season.
Wow.
I started watching that season because this was right before school in August. The season started in September, a couple weeks later. And I just started watching and I've never stopped. But the Jets tricked me. That was the 1982 season. The Jets made it to the AFC Championship game, the game before the Super Bowl. So I was like, this is great. This is what it's gonna be like. Obviously, we've luckily been able to get back to that game 3 more times in my lifetime. We've lost them all, so the Jets have never been to a Super Bowl in my lifetime. But where the story takes a turn, my friends all had Jets jerseys, and I asked my mom to get one, and we were just not buying those kind of things at that point in our life. The first 7 or 8 or 10 years of America was shelter, food, the end. No vacations, no toys, like we just weren't buying things. And so at night, my mom, while I was sleeping, knitted me a Jets sweater, a Jets jersey. And at that point already, my favorite number was 5 and she put the number 5 on it. And so it's singularly my prized possession. When I buy the New York Jets, I'm gonna take that sweater, which I have locked up in the most safe place on earth, and I'm gonna put it in the entrance of the stadium with a little plaque that says, from not being able to afford a jersey to owning the whole fucking team. And I think, you know, I think a lot of us in this room, many don't, my father doesn't have this, a lot of people I know don't have this, but some of us in this room are extremely lucky to be the byproduct of an incredible mother. And when you are the byproduct of an incredible mother, you are really unstoppable. And so like nothing scares me. I think I can do everything. And she's, you know, the beacon and seed of everything that has worked for me in my life. And so the number 5, the reason, if some of you have seen my social media, the reason I put up the number 5 is that's a little bit of a head nod to the person that crafted me, and that's my mom.
So you can imagine my tender home looking straight up at Gary for that whole conversation. And I'm like, whoa.
I'm like, you want to go shoot hoops? He's like, let's get to the stadium.
Oh, we just stopped to change clothes. We're really
going to eat. Right, talk to me about, let's have some fun, because this is a fun weekend. Give me some predictions on tonight, 3-point slam dunk. Give me some observations from the first half of the season. Which player or team has surprised you most? Let's have a little sports radio fun.
Well, like, let's just go 30 seconds ago. We just walked in here. Who do we see in the hallway?
Lauri.
Mm-hmm. Right? And he looked pretty calm. And first of all, how about Lauri starting the All-Star game?
The best. Yeah. Such a good
kid. You guys all had that plan at the beginning of the year, right? And we did. And then the 3-point contest, which, you know, the only thing he asked about was, hey, what side am I shooting on? And that's pretty cool, right? So I think that, I mean, but the three-point contest is going to be epic. You got Dame, you got Tatum, I think Albert, like, it is going to be epic tonight. And I actually think the dunk contest is going to surprise you.
Is the, you know, let's just talk about that, because I think we'll like, the dunk contest is, in yeah, it's like interesting, because I feel like the NFL decided to go very radical with the Pro Bowl this year. They went a completely different direction. Whether it's good, bad, or indifferent.
Did they do an all-tournament?
They did a bunch of things. Are we competing with the NFL right now?
No, no.
Well, that was a Raz.
Yeah.
You razzed them.
Okay.
Just, no, but seriously, I feel like the dunk contest is really worth debating, innovating heavily. Like, I've been thinking, I remember last year when I was at it, I was like, I wonder what a dunk contest would look like if it was two people, a team, to do the dunk. Like, obviously people brought people out and they jumped over them and this, that, and the other thing, but it feels like we've gotten to a place where we either have to like put it 11 feet or like do something like it. These kids can only do so much that we haven't seen as fans. Like, you can't ask them to just like be Superman and just stay up there the whole time. Like, there's only so much that can be done.
Would you feel that way if Doc Morant was in it?
Yeah, and I'm being serious. I know what you're saying, and I agree with that. Like, and he's just incredibly entertaining to watch, but he's not gonna do any dunk that I'm like, I can't believe that just happened. It's just too hard to do something at this point in the dunk contest that hasn't been done.
Like Blake Griffin jumping over a Kia?
Yeah, that was like good marketing. I liked that as a businessman. I was like, that was cool. Yeah, I mean, look, listen, of course, we've gotten into the Cedric Sabalos and Dee Brown and Blake, but it does feel like, I don't know. Yeah, just exactly, like you bring out some player that used to be on the team. Like, it just feels hard to innovate. It feels like there needs to be something, like maybe a trampoline or some
shit. Yeah, loves the trampoline. That's like her favorite part. It's like, we'll be going to halftime. Like, no, we're standing here. Why? The trampoline numbers are out. Hey, you've seen the same thing. They throw it, and that's person else. But it's still pretty cool. So I think we should. Joey?
Joey?
You got some to-do lists this week.
Something I've never seen before.
What?
Joey is claiming.
Come on here, Joey.
Joey, get up here. Come on, Joey. Let's hear it for Joey. Come on, get loud.
We hear from everyone else. We never hear from the NBA. Just sit down for a second here. This is not playing.
This is definitely not playing.
Okay. So. Tell the crowd.
How does this feel?
What we're thinking about.
I mean, one, Gary, if you're open for consulting, we're available. We'd love to have your ideas.
And
you're in.
Thank you.
And I think, you know, what's exciting about tonight, what I think is important about the NBA and in particular the leadership Brian, you and Ashley, Brian Sweeney and others are bringing in, is innovation. That's what we do in the NBA. We are never going to stay static. And so the ideas that you're bringing, they're on board. Let's do it. And so that's what I think is exciting about tonight is the focus for this draft and for you're going to see the draft first time live on Sunday. Who would have thought that would have been possible? To be able to have the draft live prior to the game.
I like that.
I think it's going to be awesome. Everybody's playing pickup ball. That's the first thing you do is you got to pick teams. That's happening live on Sunday.
I like that.
Certainly, I think the other piece for this dunk contest is, believe me, we are all of you. We know it didn't work exactly the way we wanted to last year, and so there's been a team who's been working on this for the last couple months, working with every player who's going to participate in that dunk contest. And so we take it seriously, and we're going to innovate.
That's one. I'm one and done.
That was good. Let's switch seats. Let's hear one more time for Joey. You like that little switcheroo? Yes, sir. Real quick, I want to hear from your perspective. I want a little more basketball sports stuff. Which team has surprised you most this year? Or what? Or you're sitting at these games, you're paying attention. What player do you think took the biggest step this year? Give us a little basketball.
Why did they both start here in Utah?
what player?
No, the team that's probably, I feel like it's been pretty, like this has been a weird year in the NBA, like where everyone's bunched together.
Yep.
And it's like, there's no way that between like halfway through the season, between first and like seventh place, it's like four games. And so no one's running. And this is my real, like going into kind of our second, third year in the league where, like, one year it was us that was just running away. The next year was Phoenix running away. And the commonality between both of those is you kind of really want the regular season. We got into the playoffs, and it's super disappointing, right? And that's a hard thing to recover from. And I think for us, like, going back into our second year, where we were having won all the games in the regular season and getting bounced early, to get back on the horse the second year, first of all, you're never going to break up the team.
Sure.
Like, that's really hard. You're never going to want to rock because you just proved that you could beat anyone on any night. But then it's like, how do you prep for the playoffs and not the regular season as much because you got to be healthy? In our situation, we knew what it was like not being healthy at the end. And you had a lot of injuries this year. And so I think there's a few teams, there's a lot of teams who are way better than the record right now, but because they haven't been healthy. I mean, we're going to finally see, I mean, I don't know, what is it, 10, 15 games left that we're going to see a full Warriors roster.
Yep.
Right? And we dealt with that before, right? We haven't seen Phoenix yet.
Yep.
I don't think we've seen the Clippers, right? We've seen Boston. We've seen Milwaukee.
And even they have a scary little thing.
But they've been more healthy than what we've seen. And so I think it's going to be an action-packed last part of the season. From a player standpoint, I think Lowry, you can't say that without talking about Lowry. I mean, he went to Europe this summer as being, and it's not like Cleveland wanted to move Lowry. Like, that was part of the deal that we did.
Yep.
And so we saw him in Europe, and the confidence of being the first option. And then if that translates, especially coming out of the Jazz, what's most impressive is for the first time in his career, when people come in the night before, they're looking at the scout against Jazz, he's circled as number one, like, how do we stop Lowry? So I remember the first couple games this year where he started going off and it was crystal clear that the other teams were focused on him. He was getting double teamed. They were hitting him at every turn and it was just twice as physical for him. And to see him be able to handle that, catch the ball, and to see Will be able to like run plays to highlight Lowry in spots where he can be successful, maybe not take as much punishment. Like, it's been incredibly impressive and impressive. And then watching others like JC step up and you know, we made some moves, but a lot of those moves were because we wanted to get more playing time to understand what do we have in OCHAT? Mm-hmm. What do we have in Taylor? What do we have in Colin Sexton? Like, and how does all that work? And so we freed up about 66 minutes a game for the second half to really see what we've got. And we've got a lot of time. So, that wasn't a Jazz rant, but I don't want to talk about other teams.
I love it.
Tell me what you know about the Giants.
The Giants, I hate with all my heart.
Hey, let's shift gears.
Okay.
The only thing I want to say is, Joe, I want to thank you all for letting us dial the tracks a little bit to have jam session, okay? Because easier this NBA All-Star would have been. The easy thing is to say no. Like, it's easy in life to say no in this situation to innovation. The hard thing is to say yes. And you guys said yes, which required so much more work for you all. But as Utahns and as the people here, this doesn't happen. Everything going on doesn't happen
and we would have been isolated to like three events in Vivint. And now it's like a whole community. So the impact you're having from this and we're gonna have from this is, you know, whether it's Ryan Smith or Gary or some little kid that's sitting out there is gonna remember this, and that's what this is about. So just thank you. I want to talk a little bit about like marketing.
Okay.
Right? Because I think you all just witnessed a little bit of the magic of Gary as he sees a problem and wants to fix it. He's already planning in his head the sweater out in front of the stadium, and he knows where it's going to be. But one of the things that we've talked a lot about is how the future of marketing and these jobs, which a lot of people are going to be tied to or in some way in their career, especially the younger generation, and how you said, you know, CMOs, which are the chief marketing officers of an organization, is going to be different than anything that you've ever seen with digital and everything that's coming along. Like, tell me about your vision and what you're doing with your businesses, and how you believe every CMO that's going to be in the future will have worked for you.
I was so blown away as we've gotten to know each other through the years. That last part is, I think there's just a lot of enjoyment for us to see the people that come through our organizations go on and win. To me, there's no greater joy than the thought. Tubi ran a Super Bowl commercial that I think a lot of you saw this last weekend and tricked a lot of people. It was really clever. And to know that Nicole, their head of marketing, was behind that work that arguably, and I think so, was the Super Bowl commercial of the year, was, you know, brought through the system of Vayner. There's no like greater pride. It's not the same exactly as your children achieving, but it gets to like the close next level. And so the reason I said to Ryan is that marketing is changing so much, and we're so at the forefront in our Vayner world of companies, that I know a lot of the CMOs in 12, 15 years are gonna come through our walls. So that's what he's referencing. To make it relevant for everybody in the audience, so many people here, whether it's to make their barber shop get off the ground, like a young man I spoke to a couple hours ago, or maybe it's just because your nephew is running for mayor of your town, or maybe you just wanna raise a couple of bucks for a disease that took your parents' life. Everyone here, especially with the way that the world is going, is actually in the marketing business. You know, as we all know, there's very few 15, 16, 17, 18 year olds on earth that don't either produce posts on a daily basis in social or definitely consume it, right? So we're in a very different era than the radio era, the television era. We are now in full-fledged, mature internet era. And marketing is changing dramatically. The biggest companies in the world, many of who do a lot of things with the NBA, the reason sports is so dominant is there's so much attention. You know, it's funny, you mentioned something, Joey, Adam, like, it is astonishing to me how much I'm picking up what Joey's saying about the NBA. I think what Adam has done as commissioner since he's been here, on the shoulders of what David has done, it's pretty remarkable when you compare it to the rest of the sporting world. I believe that to be true. And one of those things that they did, for example, was Europe and the rest of the world in proper football, AKA soccer, has had branding on their jerseys forever. That was like sacrilege in American sports. And who did it first? The NBA. And by the way, in a world where we all know in here that we don't watch that many TV commercials outside of the Super Bowl, brand integration into the thing we're watching, the game, is very important. So whether it's things like the patch or things like social media and streaming services actually eating up the majority of people in this room's attention, not print, not direct mail, not television commercials we grew up with, the landscape is changing dramatically. And yesterday I was here and I had 7 to 8 meaningful meetings with CEOs and CMOs of very large companies, and I was blown away by how every one of those leaders has completely accepted this new world compared to, let's say, 2019, even the beginning of COVID, where big brands still thought, I've got to do the big television spot, and you got to do the big brand campaign. And so what comes natural to many people in this room under 25, because it's been their entire world, YouTube, social, video game, streaming, gaming, Twitch, like that is now getting to a level of scale. And what we know is that there's a lot of people in this room who now know how to use QR codes and they're not under 20. There's a lot of people in this room who are not 20 who are consuming TikTok every single day. And so the world is changing significantly, and whether you're a big business or whether you are literally a human in here that wants something to happen, understanding how to make the pictures and the videos and the written words for these platforms is the battleground. And that is, for me, the only thing I do for a living for the last 25 years, whether it was helping my dad's liquor store or doing what I do in marketing or VFriends or whatever I'm doing, it's really just trying to figure out where the attention is and how to be the best at filling that attention with information.
So I'm gonna take it one level. Like, you're basically saying, hey, look, this is here, it's here to stay, the ship is set, the biggest CEOs have realized it. And when we took over the Jazz, I remember in our first couple meetings, we said, hey, we need to make a huge push to digital. Like tickets, everything, and we like drew out like a 5-year vision. And COVID hits, right? Fully. And then if we fast forward, we're only 2 years plus in, and this entire event, like, all we can do is digital.
You, your fans here, this organization is very fortunate that you are a digital native, you yourself. And that's what I think is so exciting about the NBA as well, which is you, Matt, who just jumped into Phoenix, right? I saw Mark Cuban this morning working out, and it made me think of like.
Yeah, you guys both got out of the elevator.
Yeah. Well, we're working out, you know, we're trying to stay alive. You know, and I saw him, and I've been thinking a lot about this. Like, the NBA ownership's progressiveness is profound. It's why the league is more digital. And, like, look, like, there's no time machines. I know there's a lot of people here who have a lot of emotions towards digital. That I don't like the kids on TikTok. I don't like this. I don't like that. That people said that about the automotive. People are like, I like my horse. It's true. Go read the articles about the television. We don't need the television. The radio's just fine. Right? There was, you know how many people here did not want to get email? Do you know how many people here once had a beeper and said, I'm never getting a cell phone because my beeper's just fine? Do you know how many people here debated me only 15 years ago that they were never gonna go to the iPhone because their BlackBerry had buttons on it and they needed the buttons? We have opinions. Technology doesn't care about our opinions. It's just gonna continue to move, and either we get on it or it takes us out.
So perfect. Ships sell, we're going, everyone's gonna be on TikTok, there's no more television, we get it all.
Yep.
I've been around you enough to know that your personality is authentic, both who you are just walking around when there's no social and there's no camera, and then when you're recording like your morning little video to the world, and when you see people and you just tell random strangers like how much I love you. And when we're walking by and hearing someone's like, hey Gary, what's up man, can't wait to see you, and you literally stop and say, hey, I can't wait to see you, I'm looking forward to it. You've been a positive light in social media. And one of the problems is most people who look at social, they're looking at a blank screen. And that is like super daunting. And it's almost like, I'll never forget.
You mean when they're gonna make something?
Yeah, when
not when you're consuming, when you're like, what am I gonna make?
And I remember like this story in the NBA where like, and it was Nanny telling me, like he had a player who signed a max contract, and the player came in to him and was like, hey, I just signed for all this money, well, how should I act now? And who should I be?
And so I think that same thing is going on with people. They're looking at this blank screen on social and they're like, well, what am I supposed to be? Who should I act? And it's not pulling out everyone's best self. You manage to be positive and bridge that gap in a unique way that people need. Help those people who are out there going, hey, what's my social persona? And how to make those that distance or that gap like a thing, because I see it when I'm sitting there going, first of all, that's not, I know you, you're not that person. You're not even remotely that person.
I think that you have to ask the simple question of why are you doing it? The reality is, most of the social that's out there isn't working because it's selfish. You want the likes. You want the money. You want to sell the thing. And we don't want that. Like, the reality is that the reason people are struggling, to your point, the reason people are faking it is because people are not confident in who they are, which is a very real reality. And that's not a new thing. That has been a human truth forever. But the reality is you need to put out things that provide value, and they can come in a lot of shapes and sizes. There's people like myself who've built large audiences, and we can analyze that. I'll tell you who I'm really fascinated by. The people who are posting on a daily basis who have very tiny, tiny audiences and enjoy it to no end. They enjoy it because they just want to share videos of them playing video games or cooking or things of that nature. This becomes a very simple game of why are you doing this? If you're doing it because you enjoy it and it is a hobby, no different than playing golf or sailing or skiing, you do it because you love the thing that you're putting out there and it's part of the process, you're gonna win. The problem is too many people want certain things and they want it fast. So now people are like, oh, I'm gonna do this because I'm gonna become famous and get brand deals and I'm gonna be a millionaire in a week because I'm big on TikTok, and that's a disaster framework, right? A lot of other people spend their time on there trying to scare and hurt people because they themselves are scared and hurt, right? I tell people all the time, a lot of people are like, I can't post anymore. The negative comments crush me. And I ask them, I'm like, do you ever think about, instead of being upset for yourself, being compassionate to the person that's leaving that? If somebody takes time out of their day to come to your page and tell you you suck, their life is horrible. Don't feel bad for yourself, feel bad for them. So, you know, for me, what I would tell everybody here is,
I just wanna do
for the world. Oh,
let's go ahead.
Yep.
Like, hey, what are you talking
about?
Yep. Like, hey, Gary, easy for you to say, you're not dealing with this, or like, this is what's going on. Like, life's great for you. Like, and by the way,
I say, I'm sorry you feel that way, but you know nothing about my life. You think you do, you don't know how I got here, you don't know what's actually happening. The biggest issue right now is America has fallen in love with pointing fingers. The second you get into thumbs, it gets real good. When people are accountable, the reason I have no judgment on anyone is because I know I don't actually know what's going on in their lives. You have no idea if their mom just called and said their father's terminally ill. You have no idea about anything. You think you know. You think you know, and it makes you feel good to judge because it's a micro release of what you're feeling. So for me, when people say easy for you, I'm like, you know, first of all, honestly, I struggle to even get into you don't know me because I go into deep compassion of like, damn, you're gonna need to go there because you're not in a great place. I hope that gets better. You know, like, I don't post content to get affirmation. I post content, at this point I've come to realize I'm posting content because I just wanna, I feel guilty. I feel guilty that I had such a remarkable mother who built me up. And so I'm like, screw it. I'm gonna try to do for the world what my mom did for me. And if like somebody's willing to listen, good.
So you're not sitting there going, hey, that video did well. Let's do more of that.
Well, that's interesting. This is where I get to win twice. I'm doing what I'm doing because of my life's journey, and I just said it. over here, I'm running the most progressive, largest, fastest growing independent agency in the world. And so when I'm able to use the insights of the Gary V content or the V Friends content or the WineTex content to give us insights of the things that we need to bring to our Procter & Gamble or our Pepsi or our Ford client, I'm looking at the data not only because I want to do a better, when you're trying to do something good for the world, you want all 8 billion people to hear it. I want you all to hear it. So I'm looking at it to figure out the angles of the what we call SOC, strategic organic content. Too many people post without any thought of what is required to make a post do well. What's the post production? What time do you post it? What's the copy that supports it? What's the first 3 seconds of the video? What's the overlay image? So I don't think people are putting enough strategy into it. So yes, I am looking at that, but that's a little bit more to feed the operational beast and to give me an at bat the next video to get as many people to hear it. Look, they're about to kick us off.
Social media workshop is gonna go over in a second.
Do you know that they're yelling at us because we're being rude because somebody else has to say? So can you say goodbye?
Well,
that's what I'm trying to tell you.
Oh, okay.
We're done.
Okay.
We're finished, Rye.
Well,
it's over for us.
All right, I have no idea.
Well, say goodbye and thank you.
Hey, thanks everyone.
Thank you guys. Love you so much.